One day I looked at the comments on one of my sermonettes I'd given a few years back, and several mentioned the word preterism. I didn't know what that was. And so I looked it up, see what they were talking about, and found that preterism is a belief that all prophecy in the Bible has already been fulfilled. So the school of thought interprets the book of Daniel as referring to events that happened from the 7th century B.C. until the 1st century A.D. While seeing the prophecies of the book of Revelation as events that happened in the 1st century A.D. So I want to start off by reading some verses in Isaiah 35. You don't have to turn there, but think about whether this is the current state of our world. The wilderness and the wasteland should be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice, even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given to it, the excellence of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of the Lord, the excellency of our God. Then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then the lame shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the dumb sing, for water shall burst forth in the wilderness, and streams in the desert. Christ healed the deaf and the blind, and made the lame to walk and the dumb to speak, but only around Jerusalem and not everyone there. The desert has not blossomed like a rose. This future event will be for all of mankind. So what about what this day represents? This is what the preterists say about Revelation. And I quote, proponents of the futurist view, which is all of us, say that their approach is necessary because there is no correspondence between the events prophesied in the book of Revelation and anything that has happened in history. This conclusion is reached because of an overly literalistic approach to the symbolism of the book and a lack of appreciation for how such language was used in the Old Testament prophetic books. This, however, is not the most serious problem with the futurist approach. The most fundamental problem with the futurist approach is that it requires a very artificial reading of the many texts within the book itself that point to an imminent fulfillment of its prophecies. The book opens and closes with declarations indicating that the things revealed in the book must soon take place, which is Revelation 1:1 and 22:6. It opens and closes with declarations indicating that the time is near, Revelation 3 and 22:10. The book of Revelation has direct relevance to the real historical first century churches to whom it was addressed, and the text of the book itself points to the imminent fulfillment of most of these prophecies. End of quote. Now let's turn to a verse in Revelation that shows what we look forward to that is represented by this Day of Atonement. If you'll turn to Revelation 20, and we will read verses 1 through 4. Then I saw an angel coming down from heaven, having a key to the bottomless pit, and a great chain in his hand. He laid hold of the dragon, that serpent of old, who is the devil and Satan, and bound him for 1,000 years. And he cast him into the bottomless pit and shut him up, and set a seal on him so that he should deceive the nations no more till 1,000 years were finished. But after these things, he must be released for a little while. This day represents that the time mentioned when Satan will be bound for 1,000 years. We have not had 1,000 years of peace without the presence of Satan. Excuse me. We have barely had any years at all when there has not been a war going on. John Wolford, for example, a Christian theologian, from 1952 to 1986, writes, "The preterist view in general tends to destroy any future significance of the Book of Revelation, which then becomes a literary curiosity with little prophetic meaning. Mankind cannot be at one with God at this time of atonement pictures until Satan is no longer there to influence them." Another prophecy we need to take a look at would be about the two witnesses. First, the preterist view, and our quote, Revelation 10:11 implies that the two witnesses are Jesus Christ, though the book of Revelation never explicitly identifies the two witnesses as Jesus Christ. It does provide many subtle clues throughout these two witnesses as Jesus Christ. It does provide many, or sorry, I'm rereading it, throughout these two chapters that all point to this idea. When the collective whole of the evidence is weighed and considered, the idea that Jesus Christ is the two witnesses seems to be very compelling. In the introductory verses of Revelation 10, John sees a vision of an angel crowned with divine attributes. This angel is Christ, the angel of the Lord. In Revelation 10:5, Christ, the angel of the Lord, raises his right hand to heaven. Preterist author David Chilton points out that this is the proper stance for a witness in the court of law. Almost every one of the 14 places where the name Jesus is used in the book of Revelation is in connection with the office of witnessing or revealing. Christ's identity as the two witnesses is also implied in Revelation 10:1. In this verse, Jesus' two legs are pictured as pillars of fire, according to Genesis 31:45 and verse 52 and Deuteronomy 27:1-8. And a few more Old Testament references. Pillars are used in the Bible to represent witnesses. If pillars represent witnesses in the Bible, why are Jesus' two legs depicted as pillars? Perhaps Jesus is symbolically portraying in this way in order to depict Christ as the sole embodiment of the two witnesses. End of quote. Now let's turn to Revelation 11 and we'll read 1-6. And we'll read about the two witnesses. Then I was given a reed like a measuring rod, and the angel stood, saying, "Rise and measure the temple of God, the altar, and those who worship there. But leave out the court, which is outside the temple, and do not measure it, for it has been given to the Gentiles. And they will tread the holy city underfoot for 42 months. And I will give power to my two witnesses, and they will prophesy 1,260 days, clothed in sackcloth. These are the two olive trees and the two lampstands standing before the God of the earth. Zechariah 4:11-14 mentions the two olive trees and lampstands, if you want to take a note and read that later. Verse 5, "And if anyone wants to harm them, fire proceeds from the mouth and devours their enemies. If anyone wants to harm them, you must be killed in this manner. These have power to shut heaven so that no rain falls in the days of their prophecy. And they have power over waters to turn them to blood and to strike the earth with all plagues as often as they desire." When did we read that Jesus ever used his power in this manner during his ministry on earth? Let me just skip down to where the two witnesses are murdered in verses 7-9. When they finish their testimony, the beast that ascends out of the bottomless pit will make war against them, overcome them, and kill them. And their dead bodies will lie in the street of the great city, which spiritually is called Sodom and Egypt, where also the Lord was crucified. Then those from the peoples, tribes, tongues, and nations will see their dead bodies 3.5 days and not allow their bodies to be put into the graves. Next, look at verse 11. When they are resurrected, and after 3.5 days, the breath of life from God entered them. And they stood on their feet, and great fear fell on those who saw them. Never has there been a time before where all the people on earth could witness something happening in real time, and they were not present in person. Also, Jesus was in the grave 3 days and three nights, not 3.5 days. Are they trying to say he came and died twice? I don't know about you, but I found the preterist explanation of Revelation and the two witnesses to be a little confusing, and not following what the verses said. As for the information about Christ coming quickly, God does not see time the way we do. And each generation has needed the feel of urgency of the prophecies in the book and the vastness of time. 2,000 years is not very long, and it was much closer than when Daniel spoke of these same things. Each time the church has started to flourish, the persecution has always soon followed. The preterist view believes Daniel and the Old Testament prophets all had their prophecies come to pass, and this is not enough time to go through all of them to show that this is not possible. We know from Isaiah 11:6 that the wolf also shall dwell with the lamb. The leopard shall lie down with the young goat, the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and the little child will lead them. This is obviously not our current state of the world. We know Zechariah 14:16, and it shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations which come against Jerusalem shall go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And this has not yet happened. I mean, I'm in a store of 400 to 500 people, and I'm the only one that's doing this, so we're not there yet. I don't know how widespread this preterist view of the Bible is, but one thing they are correct about is what they say about our beliefs. No corresponding events have fulfilled these prophecies. The origin of preterism seems to be Louis D. Alcazar, 1554 to 1630, of Seville, Spain. He devised what became known as the preterist system of prophetic interpretation. This theory proposed that Revelation deals with events in the pagan Roman Empire, that Antichrist refers to Nero, and that the prophecies were therefore fulfilled long before the time of the medieval church. Alcazar's preterist system has never made any impact on the conservative or evangelical wing of the Protestant movement, although in the last 100 years it has become popular among Protestant rationalists and liberals. The father of American preterism is Moses Stewart, 1780 to 1852, of Andover Seminary, who introduced preterism into the United States about 1842. So let's turn to one final verse. Turn to Revelation 11:15. Revelation 11:15. Then the seventh angel sounded, and there was loud voices in heaven saying, "The kingdoms of the world have become the kingdoms of the Lord of our Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever." How can anyone think that Jesus and God are in charge of this disaster we are living in? We can be glad the preterist view is not the current one, and we still look forward to the good news of the world yet to come, with Satan's influence removed and peace in this world at last.